Yesterday we were discussing text 38, the Eye of Devotion, which we have just collectively chanted, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena, describing the prema, the eye of prema. When one has the eye of prema, then he sees the form of Shamsundaram, Swarup, Shamasundar Swarup. He sees the original, Swarup means Swayam Bhagavan, the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is known as Shamsundar. In verse, I think it's 31, there's a description of that form, Tribhangalalitam Niyata Prakasham. Text 31, again we're reminded of Shamsundar. It says, Shamam Tribhangalalitam Niyata Prakasham. So this is the topmost form of the Lord, where the Lord shows his form as Rasaraj, as the Eporium of all rasas. So Brahma is again choosing to glorify his Govinda as Shamsundar. And the Acharyas explain different reasons. Why is Krishna or Shamsundar, why does he stand in threefold bending form? So one explanation given by Vishnu Chakravartipad, he says that Krishna is Madhurya Swarup. He is Leela Madhurya. His pastimes are very sweet and tasty and attractive and relishable to see and hear about and remember and to glorify in song, right? We sing songs about his pastimes. Jaya Radha Madhav, Kunja Bihari. Radha Madhav are enjoying in the kunjas on the banks of the Yamuna, Tatachari. So to sing about them, or to hear about them, or to see paintings of them, is very sweet and relishable. So Leela Madhurya is there. Prema Madhurya, the sweet embrace of Krishna's love, whether one is receiving that embrace as Krishna's mother, or father, or playmate, or beloved, it is very extremely relishable, an extraordinary experience to receive the prema of Krishna. So the prema madhurya, the sweet prema of Krishna, sweet pastimes. Then the form of Krishna, when part of that form is this Tribhangalalitam Niyata Prakasham, when he manifests that beautiful form, threefold bending form, it is so smooth and it's so fluid and full of movement and full of joy and full of variety and full of expectation and full of fun and sport. So this is his Rupa Madhurya, the sweetness of his form. And then there's his flute, Venu Madhurya. So everyone has had the experience hearing the sweet sound of a material flute, and maybe someday we may have the experience, as Brahma had the experience, of hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. And Krishna's flute came to Brahma and entered his ears and danced in the courtyard of his heart. And as the flute sound of Krishna danced in the courtyard of heart, the flute brought everything with it. It brought the holy land of Chintamani Dham, Sri Vrindavan. It brought the Surabhi cows. It brought the gopis and gopas. And it brought Krishna and Radha. And all these things were manifested in the Bhakti Samadhi within the heart of Brahma after hearing the flute. And so he wanted to give this flute sound to all of us as the Adi Guru, as the original Guru of the Sampradaya. He is the Adi Guru. Or you could say he's the Adi Shishya. He's the original Shishya and original Guru. Guru, of course, is Krishna. First disciple is Brahma. But we generally credit Brahma as being the head of our Sampradaya. So he received this knowledge, Tene Brahma Rita Adi Kavye. He received this knowledge in the heart. And that knowledge came in the form of sound vibration of Krishna's flute. And then he wanted to give that flute sound to us, so he gave it to us as Kam Gayatri. This is the flute sound. So by chanting Kam Gayatri, then that Kam Gayatri will fulfill the desires of the living entity to realize the spiritual world with all its variegatedness as was revealed to Brahma. So the flute manifested the spiritual world and the Kam Gayatri, and the Kam Gayatri will manifest the flute and the spiritual world within the heart of the pure chanter. So this Krishna has all these different sweetnesses. He's the Purna Bhagavan, the complete Bhagavan, and he's complete in all aspects. Complete in Shakti, because he has unlimited Shakti-mayi power, complete in energies, and complete in rasa. He has the ability to love everyone in any phase of time, in any circumstance, in any situation. This is Krishna's prerogative. When he manifests other forms of Ram, Vishnu, Narayan, Ramadi, Murti, Shukalani, Amena, Tishtan, all these other incarnations, when he manifests them, there's always some limit in their potentiality. There's some limit in their expression of power and completeness. So that's why we say that Narayan Bhagavan, he's like, what does they say? They say he's 93%, isn't it? He's 93% God. Or like the Jivas. The Jivas are 55% God. Isn't it something like that? Or no, it's, how does it go? 78% God. The Jivas, we are 78% God because we have 55 qualities. But Krishna has all 64 qualities, so he's 100% God. And one of these qualities is his ability to love all of his devotees, and any devotee from any circumstance. Akama sarva kamo va moksha kamo udaridi. Whether you approach Krishna in lust, or without lust, or for anything, he can fulfill one's desires. So, the Acharyas explain that Krishna stands in this threefold bending form because he cannot bear, he cannot carry the weight of his sweetness. His sweetness is so heavy. His sweetness of his prem, his pastimes, his form, and his flute is so heavy that just as you may stand straight, but if someone puts a big backpack on your back or a big heavy weight on your shoulder, then you may bend down like this or like this, or one leg may stand straight and you put pressure on the other, let the other leg rest for a little while, then you straighten that leg and bend the other leg. And different ways you try to adjust the heavy weight on your shoulder or head. So in the same way, Krishna has this heavy weight. His heart is laden with unlimited bhavas and rasas, and he's carrying the pure love of all of his bhaktas from all over the creation in his heart, and that's sometimes appearing as a heavy weight. But it's a burden of love, and it's a burden of sweetness. Just like a mother carries a burden inside when she has a baby inside. That may be a big burden also, 5 kilos, 7 kilos sometimes. And they also bend over from that weight, no? Or they lean back to compensate because this is going out here, so they lean back. So they're not just standing like, because it's not possible when a heavy weight is upon us. So one reason Krishna stands in threefold bending form is because he's bending under the pressure of all that sweetness, and under the heavy weight of all that that prem sarup and that lila madhurya, vena madhurya, etc. But then, this Shamsundar, who's visible here with the bhakti vilochan, with the eye of devotion, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena, santak sadeva riyesha viloka yanti yam shama sundaram achintya guna sarupam. It is inconceivable. You can say, this is what we call it achintya. How you say that Krishna cannot bear the weight? I know that when he was 7 years old, he lifted up a huge mountain. Bhagiraj Dharanaki. He lifted up Govardhan Hill, and he didn't have any difficulty. He lifted it up just like a child lifts a mushroom or a toadstool in the forest. And he held it on his pinky finger, not even his thumb, which is quite a big, strong guy. You know, strong finger. This is the weakest finger, right? This is the weakest of all fingers. And left hand is the weakest of hands, right? Krishna doesn't hold his flute in his left hand. He holds his flute in his right hand. He holds Radharani in his left hand. And she's, you know, she's all power anyway, so he doesn't need any power to hold her. So he's holding Govardhan with his pinky finger. And he's not even having any problem, except sometimes when he glances at the gopis and he's admiring their beautiful forms, their Rupa Madhurya. Then he gets a little trembling, a little nervous, and the hill is going like that. And then all the coward men, Nanda Baba and Upananda, Abhinandan, everyone, Govardhan Mala, they all put up their cowarding sticks and say, "Oh, look, look, he's getting weak. His arm is shaking, he's going to drop the hill." Because they don't know exactly what is the cause of his trembling. It's not due to weakness of body, but is some weakness of his heart. Because Krishna trembles before the awesome sweetness of Radhika's prema. But otherwise, Krishna never flinches in front of the most powerful demons. In fact, when the most powerful and ferocious demons and asuras come before Krishna, he's so nonchalant about it. He leans on the shoulder of Subal and he twirls a pastime lotus, a blue lotus flower in his right hand. He looks at Subal and Subal looks at him, and through their eyes they communicate, "Who is this guy? Who is this Bakasura, Agasura?" You know, without any, they just smile at each other and kind of communicate. "All right, I guess we have to send him to Yamaloka. All right, here's another one." And then Krishna dispenses. And it explains that when Krishna kills all these awesome demons, he doesn't tremble, he doesn't perspire, he kills them with a smile on his face. Haribo. He doesn't have any problem. He doesn't grimacing face and clenching his fist and, you know, biting his lip or anything, or huffing and puffing. He's just like, "Okay, pop, you know, no problem." And he kills, that's what, I can't help but forget, and Prabhupada says that when Krishna kills the demons, he kills them with a smile on his face, effortlessly. Because for him, everything is leela. Everything is fun. There's no, like, unhappy times. Now, there's some interesting expressions of stressed emotions, but not unhappiness as we know it. So, another explanation the Acharyas give why there's this Shyamasundara form which one hankers to see in his heart of hearts, and who's always dancing. And actually, one of our Prabhupada's godbrothers, Srila Sridhar Swami, he had a darshan. And at this time, all the members of ISKCON used to go to see him in 1978. So I was there with Satsrupa Maharaj and some other leading personalities today in ISKCON. And he said, he looked at everyone and he said, reality is dancing. Always dancing. and then everyone... So he said, "You understand? Reality is always dancing." And then so he asked, I forget who he asked, maybe someone, "Can you explain this to me?" Because he had this way of speaking these very eloquent statements, which were completely philosophical sutras. They were profound and poignant and compressed, esoteric, transcendental revelations about the beautiful form and activities of Sri Krishna, the beautiful, the reality, the beautiful, as he used to say. So he said, reality is always dancing. So then he went on to explain about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and that the highest reality is the expression of Mahabhav and Prema, and how when Lord Chaitanya is overwhelmed with that ecstasy, then he's just dancing in the kirtan. So kirtan, where Lord Chaitanya is dancing with Nityananda or Gadadhar, especially with Gadadhar at times like this, and other antaranga bhaktas, as was mentioned in the Bhagavatam class, maybe today, about spreading the sankirtan movement with the antaranga prema bhaktas. When Lord Chaitanya is dancing like that, you know, that's the ultimate reality. The reality is always dancing. But at any rate, it's explained that Krishna, this weight of tribhanga, this tribhanga means bent in three places. It represents Shyamasundara as being the ideal aspiration of the soul and the ideal perfection to hanker for. So the first basic, you can say, curve or bend of Shyamasundara is his feet and legs. There's like his feet, then there's like his stomach and his middle region, then there is his face like this, right? threefold. So Acharyas explain that these three bends in Shyamasundara's form, because Ramchandra and Narayan Vishnu, they don't stand like that. They stand, as we've discussed before, in a very intimidating pose, a powerful, intimidating pose of the all-powerful, omniscient, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipotent Lord, the Lord of everything, the Lord of creation, the God of gods. Ramachandra, he's ready to fight. I mean, he's showing his weapons. You know, he has his arrow, his quiver of arrows on his shoulder, and he has his bow on his other shoulder, and he's standing there very, with Sita and Lakshman, and he's like a mini army. When you see him, he has Lakshman and Hanuman, and then his energy, his potency, Sita Devi, he's ready to fight. So he has a sweet countenance, but he's presenting an imposing darshan, arrows, bows. But then you see Vishnu, and Vishnu may be a little milder form, but still standing straight, and he's just going like this, holding lotus flower in one hand, and chakra in the other, and club, and conch, shank, and gada, like that. So two of these are for killing demons. The gada, the club, and the chakra, Sudarshan disc or chakra, they're for killing demons. And then lotus flower and a conch shell are for blessing the devotees. But still, there's a mixture there. There's some sweetness and there's some Aishvarya. A lotus flower is sweet, but conch shells are something sweet, but mostly Aishvarya. You see in Vrindavan, in the Goswami temples, conch shells do not make their they don't appear there. There's no for Artik. Radharaman, Damodar, Madana Mohan, Shyamasundara, Gokulananda, etc. There are no conch shells. Because the last time a conch shell was blown here in Vrindavan, does anyone know when that was? At the 4:30 Artik in Krishnabharan Temple. The last time a conch shell was blown in Vrindavan was when Akrura mounted the chariot and he put the seat belts. He put one seat belt on Balaram and one seat belt on Krishna, right? Because when you get in the car, you have to wear the seat belt, you know, this thing, safety belt, right? So he put the safety belts on Krishna and Balaram, then he blew the conch shell. Da, da, da. So the first sound of the conch shell put the bodies of the gopis and the gopas of Vrindavan on the ground. The second shell of the conch shell took the minds out of their body. And the third sound of the conch shell took their hearts. So when someone talks about a conch shell in Vrindavan, it means that Akura has come back. Because actually when Uddhava came back, he was told, don't blow any conch shells. So when Uddhava came back, then the gopis were remarking. They saw, oh, this is the same chariot? These are the same horses you see on those horses? The blinders on their eyes, there's leather, little leather part of their face thing, you know. There's little blinders so the horses can't look. And on the back side of those leather blinders, there's a golden letter. And it says K. K, 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 K. Right? There's eight horses. 2 ears each. So, there's eight Ks, there's eight Ks and four horses. How is it? What is it? Yeah. Four horses and eight Ks. So when Akrura came in that same chariot, whose chariot was that? Oh, K for Krishna. No, sorry. K for Kamsa. Kamsa sent that chariot with Akrura to collect Krishna and Balaram for the Dhanurajagya, the wrestling match, Chandra Mushtika and all that. Then Krishna left. And then Akrura blew the conch shell, and then I already explained. So then sometime later, maybe, let's see. It's hard to say exactly what time later, because Krishna spent 18 years in Mathura. He was there from the age of 10 till 28, so sometime during that time he sent Uddhava to come here to give a message to the gopis. So Uddhava came here, and Uddhava came in the same chariot, the same K, 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 K. Because now that chariot belonged to the original K, Adi K, Adi Keshava, Krishna, because Krishna defeated Kamsa and took over his chariot, right? Just like if you, you know, defeat some rich man, you take his Mercedes or something, right? So now, Krishna, he sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. So when the gopis saw, the next morning, they saw this chariot parked outside, you know, Nanda Baba's house, they started conjecturing, who is this? They said, my God, is that cruel person come back here again? Now that Kamsa has died? We heard that Kamsa has been killed, but now these must be his relatives, these must be his ministers and brothers. They've come back here to collect all of our dead bodies and offer our dead bodies in the funeral pyre of Kamsa as part of a, you know, ceremony after the death, 13 days after or whatever. They're going to throw it because we all died. He knew that we all died after Krishna left. So now he's coming to collect all of our bodies to make some kind of offering of the bodies of the Brijbasis and the, you know, the Jagya burning up Kamsa. So they were speculating like this. So therefore, conch shells are not, that was the last time a conch shell was blown. Because conch shells signify taking Krishna out of Vrindavan. And none of the Brijbasis want to even contemplate such a horrible, disastrous thought that Krishna would leave Vrindavan. So Vishnu presents this form, which is rather imposing, even with his conch shell, which is supposed to be blessing the devotee. But Krishna, his form, Tribhanga Lalitam Niyata Prakasham, Shamasundar Guna Sarupam, Achintya Guna Sarupam, this form, he is just relaxed. He's just, it is like a candid picture of someone. Whereas Vishnu and Ram, Narayan, they look like they've gone into a portrait studio to have their paintings done or their photographs done. Okay, straighten up your jewelry. Okay, brush your hair. Okay, adjust your crown. Okay, everything ready. Okay, seat, stand straight, shoes together. Okay, ready, Hanuman, everyone? Okay, one, two, three, smile. Ram. But Krishna, he's just walking down the path. Haribo, and then you catch him. Tribhanga Lalitam. So he's very spontaneous, and he didn't rehearse. And you see when you catch him like that, and he's standing in threefold form, the garland may be going like this, and his chudders going up like this, and his necklaces are going out like this. Anyone who's sensitive, any pujari who's sensitive to the personal reality of the deity, that the deity is personally Krishna, then he can understand how Krishna will look when he's walking with Radharani, or how everything will move in its own transcendental way. So he knows the art of what we call pinning up the deities, so to speak. He knows how to make them. See, it looks natural, like he's moving. He's moving, and he's sweet, and he's most attractive form. So there's no weapons. He's completely, there's no armor. There's very just garlands, a few necklaces, some gunjamala, some little berry necklace of berries, red and black berries, and a flute. I mean, how much can you scare someone with a flute? A little flute you can't do anything with. It's like a child's toy. So this is the form. So, and he's standing with one foot on the ground and one foot next to Radharani. So the first tribhanga, the first bend of Shamasundar is from his foot to like his legs and his feet. So acharyas say this represents sambandha gyan. This represents the foundation that we have to stand on the ground. Of course, that could be our problem also. We may be flying in the sky. If we're flying in the sky, we have no ashrita. Ashrita means shelter. It can be no guru pad ashraya. It means no ashrita with guru. under the foot of Guru, or we can have no ashram ashrita, we have no ashram, we're floating and flying between, you know, brahmachari grihas, grihas vanapras, vanapras sannyas, sannyas grihas, or, you know, whatever, you know, or floating between, you know, loving and leaving it, or, you know, embracing it and rejecting it. So in this way, we're floating in our own spaces, and we're engaged in our own particular places, but we don't have any proper shelter. So we don't have a strong foundation, and one cannot build or go forward unless his feet are placed on the ground solidly. Chanaka Pandit explains in Niti Shastra that you should not lift up one foot until you should take steps. When one foot is secure, then you lift up the other foot and go forward. So, in other words, a way of saying it is, don't give up a sure thing for an unsure thing. Like you go in the northern places of Europe, like Germany and these places, where it snows and gets cold, or really cold. And they have like these lakes and saroveras and things. And then sometimes it gets cold and then it starts to freeze into ice. And then, of course, you go playing around there, ice skating and running around, things like that. But first, you want to check it. So you come to the side of the river, and you have one foot on the bank of the land, and you put one foot with your shoe on the edge of the river, where there's supposed to be ice now. It's supposed to be solid, no more water but ice. And you tap with your foot. Yes, things pretty solid. Then you tap a little harder, okay, let me go out there. Then you have one foot on the land and you just kind of lean out a little bit on one foot to see. And then you hear it starts cracking, oh! You jump back, wow, not yet, I got to wait a few more days, you know. So you don't give up a sure thing for an unsure thing. You're safe, your foot is safe on one side, so you, when it's safe over there to make progress, and you put that foot down and you bring the other one. So, this is foundation, this is Sambandha Gyan. So the first position is to take shelter under the feet of Guru. So when Krishna is lifting his foot up, there's the consideration of tattva and there's the consideration of lila. So the consideration of tattva vichara, means that this foot, when Krishna is lifting his foot up, he says, look, I have one foot solidly on the ground. And I have one foot I'm lifting in the air. That's for you to come under here. Please come under here and take shelter. Sarvadharman prityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Don't worry, masuchaha, don't worry. My foot is very, very soft. And my foot is very sweet. It smells very nice. It looks very nice. It's very nice to touch. And there's plenty of room under here for everyone. So you please come under my foot and take shelter here. You establish a relationship with me. You surrender unto me and you serve me. So our relationship with God or Krishna begins at the feet, where we humbly submit our head under the feet of Krishna and we ask for service. So the feet of Krishna extend themselves to us in this material world as the feet of Guru. So Rupa Goswami says that the beginning of bhakti, the culmination of prayojana of bhakti, the final point of bhakti, of course, is prema, Krishna prema. But that prema begins with surrender, to take shelter, to find some shelter, ashram, to find some ashram, to find some guru. So that is called gurupad ashraya, to take shelter at the lotus feet of guru. Means to establish a relationship with that guru, based on understanding, philosophically understanding the identity of Guru, the identity of Krishna, the identity of the self, and the identity of this world, and the necessity of human life for realizing God through the means of Guru and surrender and sadhana and service. So that's the first curve of the Lord, the bend of his foot and leg. And of course, from the Leela consideration of pastimes, because what Krishna does, he does for himself and he does for others. When he comes to this world, he does so many things for himself to relish the sweetness, like Lord Chaitanya came as Krishna, relishing the mood and mellow of Srimati Radharani. So those are pastimes for himself, of himself, with his eternal associates. But when he displays his eternal pastimes in this world, he also does those things, he does beneficial activities for others. So he's engaging, standing like that, to invite the living entities to take shelter at his feet, and he's very kindly showing his feet every day, isn't it? This is his kindness. Krishna generally shows his feet every day. Because our surrender has to begin there. Sakshat Hari. Sakshat Hari is Guru, represents Krishna. So that he represents the principle of surrender. So Krishna is reminding us every day, oh please, you see, here's my feet. When are you coming? When are you going to surrender? When are you going to take shelter of my feet? This lifetime? Next lifetime? I'm always here. I'm always here for you. I'm always waiting. Do you want to feel my feet on your head? You say, no, not really. Not too much interested with that right now. I have a lot of work to do, you know. So you just bless me and let me carry on, and I'll think about your feet later. But Ambarish Maharaj, he explained by his own example that this is the beginning. Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayor. That the lotus feet of Krishna, they have to sit on your head, because your head is the problem. Your head is the big problem, you know. It's screwed on backwards, as they say in colloquial ungrace. Your head is screwed on backwards. So when Krishna's feet are on our head, then it makes us see the right way. So that's the Sambandha is represented there. But Krishna, for his own purposes, he stands there next to Srimati Radharani, and he says, what is all this? I've heard so much description about this girl, this beautiful girl next to me, this Sundari. I heard something that sometimes she's known as Gandharvika. And this someone was telling that this Gandharvika, she has this name because her body is more fragrant than all the most beautiful fragrant flowers in Nanda Kanana and all over the universe. You cannot estimate how sweet and beautifully smelling her transcendental form is. So she's received the wonderful title of Gandharvika. Ganda means fragrance, or Saurabh. Saurabh or Ganda, Gandharvika. So I would like to find out something about how she smells. So then in a very secret way, Krishna takes his foot, because he's like you can say, indirect the way he moves. Everything Krishna does is in a crooked way. He stands in a crooked way, and he plays very crooked sounding songs in his flute, and he has a crooked stick, and the movements of prema are also crooked. So in the same way, the obvious way to smell someone is like just go next to them and say, oh, like your mother or father sometimes when you're a young boy or girl and maybe you're doing some wrong things. So your mother and father say, let me smell. And they smell your mouth and they may have some response that you don't appreciate. But Krishna is thinking, no, that's the way, though, I have to do everything special. So then he very secretly takes his foot and slides it over there, and with the edge of his heel, he very quietly lifts up the bottom of Radharani's sari. Just the bottom, with the heel of his foot. He lifts it up, so her sari goes like little like this. So when her sari goes like that, then there's this outpouring of this beautiful fragrance that she's keeping concealed inside. This beautiful fragrance comes out, and then Krishna... That's why he's leaning like this. And he's just... That's why he's smiling so nice. It's not because he likes what he's playing on the flute. But he's smelling the wonderful fragrance of Radharani's transcendental, beautiful form, Gandharvika. So that's the Leela Vichar, the consideration of Krishna's actions for his own sweet pleasure and pastimes. Just as Lord Chaitanya, he's chanting Hare Krishna, he's distributing, it just so happened that it was time for the Yuga Dharma. So the secondary reason, it's not the primary reason, it's listed as the secondary reason for Lord Chaitanya's advent, was to spread the holy name. That's not the primary reason, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in the same way, Krishna has his primary reasons for adventing and manifesting his lila, then his secondary reasons, mukhya vritti and gona vritti. So these have been discussed. So now, this is Shyamasundar Achintya Guna Sarupam. Achintya Guna Sarupam means that this form of Shyamasundar is very difficult. His qualities, Achintya Guna Sarupam, this Sarupam, this original, this form of Rasaraj, this Akila Rasamrita Murti, Krishna, is very, very difficult to understand. And actually, to see, as we're told by Brahma, it's seen at the level of prema. But the second curve of Krishna, which is like his, from his hips to his chest, this mid region. So there's his feet, sometimes the curve of Krishna is listed as his feet or his knees. So that's the first one, his feet and knees, his legs. Second one is his waist, hips. And the last one is his head and face, neck, like that. So this second curve, the second bend of Krishna, Tribhanga, there's three bends, the bending of his feet and legs, then his waist and chest, this represents Abhideya. Because Abhideya means nourishment. It means practice, the actual practice of devotion, sadhana bhakti. So sadhana bhakti ultimately leads to prema. And prema, of course, is what we're discussing here, prema vilochan, the eye of devotion or the eye of prema. So Krishna's belly, the curve at his hips and his waist, this curve represents Abhideya Tattva, or the truth of the principle of serving Krishna. The perfection and love of God, or perfection of self-realization, can be attained by actual practice of sadhana bhakti, by serving Krishna, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnam, smaranam. So we establish a foundation, we establish our relationship at Krishna's feet by surrendering and becoming his eternal servant, an aspiring servant, and then we serve him. So serving him, as we mentioned, by hearing and chanting, remembering, praying, worshipping, by serving Krishna, this nourishes our relationship, this increases our relationship, increases our attachment for Krishna, and increases our love for Krishna. And so nourishment is represented by the stomach. So this curve of Krishna at his hips and waist, this represents Abhideya. Like Abhideya, in other words, if you have a body is a foundation of existence. Existence is established in this world by having a material body. So you have existence, you have an existence, you have a material body, but if you don't eat, you won't have existence for very long. Your existence will come to a rapid close. So eating maintains your existence. So this eating nourishes your existence and maintains your foundation and continues your reality in this world, at least in the physical reality. So in the same way, sadhana bhakti or abhideya, the practice of devotion, this maintains our foundation or maintains our relationship with Krishna. So that's why Krishna, Tribhanga Lalitam Niyata Prakasham, Krishna's second fold or bending is at his hips and his waist. So it's this area. So we nourish our devotion by serving Krishna, serving Guru, hearing and chanting, remembering, reading Bhagavatam, hearing Harikatha, discussions of Krishna. That nourishes us, and as we get nourished, then we grow. Our devotion grows. It grows through the stages of regulated devotion, out of duty and fear of moving by fear and duty, and then we develop attachment, rag. And then our devotion is moved by attachment and out of some sweetness of attraction, and then that develops and condenses and thickens into bhava and finally prema. So the final curve of Krishna, Tribhanga Lalitam, the Shyamasundara Guna Sarupam, is Krishna's face. And his neck is like face, his neck and face like that. He's leaning like this, sometimes he's like this, like that. So this represents prayojana. Because as we nourish, as we go from Krishna's feet by Sambandha, and then we rise up Krishna's, the first and second canto, establish our foundation, that's Krishna's feet and legs, then we rise up to his stomach as we study more Bhagavatam, do more seva, then finally our devotion rises and gets nourished and goes from Krishna's stomach, we come to Krishna's heart. So from stomach to heart, that is the process of Abhideya. So as we cultivate sadhana bhakti, we move from Krishna's stomach to his heart. So when we reach Krishna's heart, we're at the platform of asakti, of attachment. So you can say that, you can say Shraddha, Sarusanga, Vajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, they represent this Sambandha Gyan and this first curve of Krishna. And then that brings us in the stomach, Anartha Nivritti. So Anartha Nivritti continues, the practice of devotion continues, and then we go from Anartha Nivritti to Nishtha to Ruchi, and then we rise up, and then we come to Krishna's heart. So this is the fulfillment of our Abhideya, that it brings us this to actually to the heart of Krishna, where we become very, very attached to Krishna, very, very steady in our devotion. This is Nishtha, and we get taste in the performance of our activities of hearing and chanting. And then, this last curve of Krishna's face, that is when we enter the realm of Prayojana Tattva. Prayojana Tattva is Bhava and Prema. It is the latter part of Asakti or attachment and Bhava and Prema. So when we come to the platform of Bhava, then we can see, sometimes, it's called fleetingly, we can see Krishna time to time, momentary darshan. And then, as that's it, bhava bhakti. And when we come to prema, then we can see Krishna all the time. And that prema is only the threshold of prema, which can be perceived and experienced in this mortal coil, in this physical body. Because when prema starts to expand, because it expands like a kiran, it's called prema kiran, a ray from the sun, it starts to expand. In other words, Krishna is the full sun of Ras and the full sun of Prema, unlimitedly effulgent and energizing and accommodating. So that ray, it's not coming from there to here. The ray, he shines a ray onto our heart. That's called the Prema Ankush, the root of Prema, which is that Bhava. But then that Bhava expands, and then the ray of Bhava, that ray expands and takes us out of, takes the soul in Swarup City out of this body back to the Prema Sun of Krishna. So what happens is that that ray, when the Prema, when we come to the platform of Prema, it's just a little Prema Kiran. It's a pencil ray of Prema. Because if more than that starts to expand within the heart, then the body simply melts. It just burns up. So that's why Acharyas say that this physical body cannot contain Krishna Prema. Because Krishna Prema is an unlimitedly expansive entity represented by the sun planet. Like you can bear to have some rays of sun on your face, right? But can you bear to open your mouth and swallow the sun? Well, Hanuman did it. Because Hanuman did that when he was a baby, he swallowed the sun. But there's not too many Hanumans around here. So the point is that we cannot bear the intensity of that heat. So nor can the physical body hold or bear the intensity of the bhavas and ecstasies that the soul experiences upon diving into the Prema Samudra of Krishna's loving embrace. So therefore, why maintain existence in this limited body which has a limited capacity? So then, what the acharyas do, they say, hey, Govinda, hey. Or they say, hey, Radhe. And they just throw away this body. Goodbye. And they go and they join the Nitya Lila of the Lord in some Boma Vrindavan, some other universe. So, this is the final curve of the Lord. This is Prayojana Tattva. This is the goal of our life, is to see the sweet smiling face of Shama Sundar in the day, in the night, inside and outside. And we are discussing, this is the Sribhanga form, we were discussing yesterday and today about the seeing Krishna. This should be something that occupies part of our life. The desire to see Krishna, or as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, the desire to act in such a way that Krishna wants to see us. But nevertheless, if Krishna is seeing you, that means you're also seeing him. So it's kind of like the end result is the same, whether you're desiring intensely lalasa mayi, siddha lalasa, intensely desiring for some perfectional stage. That perfectional stage of prayojana that we're intensely desiring for is simply prayojana. It is love of God. So love of God doesn't mean you're looking at a wall, or you're licking a wall, or you're kissing a wall. Love of God means you're licking Krishna, and you're kissing Krishna, and you're seeing Krishna face to face. Sounds good. See? There he is. So then, obviously, that is our goal. So when our goal is there, then we're going to be seeing Krishna. So if someone says, I have an intense desire to see Krishna, that's the same as saying I have an intense desire to love Krishna, to surrender to Krishna. And how do you fulfill that desire? How do you fulfill that desire? How do you attain that prema srup darshan, Krishna srup darshan, by intense service? So that's why Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati said you should act in such a way that Krishna wants to see you. But we see in the prayers that we sing that there's this mood of hankering is very much there. In Prarthana and every year in Kartik for a whole month, we sing a prayer where we're simply this Damodarastakam. He's just praying, I want to see you in a particular way. In these verse 5 and 6, he says, although you're capable of granting any boon, I don't pray for liberation, eternal life in Vaikuntha, or any other benediction. Oh, hey Nath, he says, Iram te vapur nat gopalabalam sadame manasya virastam kimanye. He says, what I want, vapur nat, hey Nath, I want to see your vapu. Vapu means rupa, your form, your divine form. What form? Well, I myself, Satyavrata Muni, I'm in Vatsalya Bhav. I can appreciate Madhurya Bhav, and he ends his prayer by glorifying Namo Radhikaya, right? Ananta Leela, the Ananta Leela of Radhika and Shyam. I hold that above my head, and I can relish that sweetness in a reflected way, but directly I want to taste the sweetness of Vatsalya Bhav, parental love. So therefore, I'm saying, Gopal Balam, I want to see that form. Sada me manasya virastam kimanye. May your form as a coward child forever remain manifest in my heart. So he's praying. He wants to see. I want to see that. And then that's his cherished desire. He's expressing his desire. I want to see you. Hey, Balagopal, I really want to see you like that. I'm already envisioning it. Although you haven't granted me that Sakshat Darshan, I'm already seeing it. And this is what I'm seeing, and this is what you have to show me. Okay? Here's exactly what I'm ordering. Just like you're meditating on something. You know, I want this kind of ice cream with this thing and that thing and this thing. Personally, I don't even eat ice cream, but anyway, it's the only thing that comes to mind. But so then someone brings you and that's exactly what you had in mind. So then he explains, Balagopal, this is what I want to see. Iram te mukham bojam avyakta nilar ritam kundalaishnigda raktaishta gopya muhuskum bitam bimba rakta daram me manasya virastam alam lakshala. Again, he uses the same term, manasya virastam. Manasya virastam means manifest in my heart. He says, Balagopal, I want to see you. I want to see you like this. I want to see your lotus face surrounded by your dark blue, glossy, reddish-tinted curling hair. So it's dark blue hair with a reddish tint, because some black hair has a bluish tint, some black hair has a reddish tint. So this, he wants to see this sham color, blackish hair with a reddish tint. And your face is being kissed. Kumbitam. Muhus kumbitam bimba rakta dharamme. Bimba. Rakta, red, he says, your face, your mother, because this is Vatsalya Bhav, just like this morning they read a purport about Mother Yashoda, they read the verse from chapter 9 in 10th canto, about Mother Yashoda churning butter and her bangles were moving and her dress was, her dopata was moving back and forth and she was singing and it was a beautiful scene. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, this is anukul. This is this scene, this meditation of this scene, which is in 10th canto, chapter 9, which was mentioned in the Bhagavatam class this morning, this scene is bhakti anukul for Vatsalya Bhav. Anyone who's in parental love and Amoda Vatsalya Bhav, this is favorable for their devotion to study this verse. It's called Mantra Upasana, Upasanam. To study this mantra, to meditate on this mantra, to try to pray to Mother Yashoda as a Nitya Parishad, an eternal associate of the Lord, please bless me with this bhava. Please let this scene enter my heart. Let this scene melt into my mind and heart. So this is what Satyavrata Muni is saying in Vatsalya Bhav, in parental love. He's saying, I want to see you. But the devotee never wants to see Krishna alone. He always wants to see Krishna with his beloveds. And some rasa, because when Krishna is alone, what is the rasa? It's shantaras. But we don't want shantaras. We want vatsalya ras, sakya ras, madhurya ras. We want to see sweet exchanges of the sweetness of the higher bhavas and rasas. So he wants to see this beautiful form of Gopal, Balagopal, and his mother is there, and she's doing what mothers do. This is what mothers do in parental love and vatsalya bhav. They smooch all over their kids, right? As in Lochan Das Thakur, he explains in Chaitanya Mangal, the mother Sachi, whenever Krishna fell in the dirt, Sachinandan, whenever he misbehaved or did something, she would chastise him, and then he would cry, and then she would feel bad and give him sandesh and bananas, because he likes sandesh and bananas, and then she would pick him up and smother him with kisses. So Lochan Das says that Mother Yashoda would smother Sachinandan with kisses. So he wants to see this, that she's kissing you, muhus kumbitam. Your face, your beautiful face is being kissed again and again by Mother Yashoda. Your lotus face, your lips are as red as the red bimba fruits. I want that to be always visible in my mind and heart. The attainment of millions of other boons is completely useless to me. So here we see that this devotee isn't just saying, well, I'm just going to do my service, just do my service, and you know, if my service is good, then maybe Krishna will show himself to me. You know, because that's, of course, that's there. But his service is also vandanam. Vandanam is also service, right? Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, parasevanam, archanam, vandanam. So offering prayers. So one category of prayers is hoping against hope, ashabandha. Praying, oh my Lord, I am most fallen, I am unqualified, I'm the worst of the worst, but that makes me special. That makes me really special. Because you came as Gorni Thai to pick up all the dirty, funky, foolish, silly, crazy people like me. I'm the perfect candidate. So I'm really glad I'm so, you know, kinky and crazy and foolish and whatever. So, because you're extending yourself to the lowest sector. So I'm praying you pick me up and fill me with this highest thing. So to pray, to see the Lord, to have darshan of the Lord, this is certainly within the prayers given by our acharyas as we sing a whole month on this prayer, Damodarashtakam. What to speak of songs in the other songs in the songbook and Prarthana by Narottam Das and Bhaktivinoda Thakur has so many songs. Eagerness for seeing the Lord in a particular mood and mellow and serving Him, not just seeing Him like some spectator at a soccer match or something. We see with the eye of service. We desire with the heart of service. We don't desire to enjoy. Wow, look at him. Look at that guy. Wow. So beautiful. Such beautiful form and arms and chest and smile. So, yeah, beautiful. No, we relish the beauty, but that beauty is so transforming that Krishna's prema, Krishna's prema darshan automatically evinces unlimited desires for service. Because love means love to see and love to serve. Seeing means seeing with the desire to serve. And serving with the desire to increase our love more and more. So we'll discuss some other points about seeing Krishna tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Is there any comments? We're following the conch shell in the Archana Marg, in the strict Archana Marg, which is delineated in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is given by the six Goswamis. It is a collective effort of Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. Gopal Bhatta Goswami did a lot of the research. It's called collaboration. The collaboration of the joint venture, Gopal Bhatta and Sanatan Goswami. Hari Bhakti Vilas. So in there he outlines the Vidhi Marg, the path of rules and regulations for those in Vidhi Bhakti or Vaidhi Bhakti, Navavidha Bhakti. And so in Archana Marg, or the proper temple worship, there is Pran Pratishtha, there are so many mahotsavs and festivals, and so many niyams and yamas, and rules and regulations. So we have to create auspicious atmosphere whenever we worship the Lord. We have to drive out all inauspiciousness and all these things. So conch shell is sounded to remove inauspicious entities and vibration from the atmosphere before conducting ceremonies and after conducting ceremonies to the Lord. And the sound is also very pleasing to the Lord. He likes the conch shell very much. It is one of his eternal, paraphernalia. So in the beginning of Archana Marg, as Prabhupada instructed us in the early days of ISKCON, he said, yes, we are worshipping Radha and Krishna, but in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. Because once in London, in Bhaktivedanta Manor, they dress the deities very simplistic, or very simply. Radharani and Krishna had pagari, some turban for Krishna, and little small tiara, like small crown for Radharani. And one some mala, some flower mala, and some leaves, and a simple kind of plain kind of sari, not much jari or embroidery work and all this fancy type of sewing. And they even made a poster of it. And then Prabhupada saw them, what is this? This is Sahajya, you're taking this thing cheaply. And they said, well, Prabhupada, we thought Radha and Krishna, they're in Vrindavan. There's peacocks and the Yamuna, and they're just some garlands and a couple necklaces. It's a natural look. Prabhupada said, no, this will ruin everything. Don't go too high, too fast, too close, too soon. Because we'll think, yes, they're just in the village, and, well, yeah, Radharani's like me, and my boyfriend's like Krishna, and we're like Radha and Krishna and Haribol. Krishna has his Vrindavan Leela in the forest, and we have our forest Leela in Nottingham, in the forest of Nottingham, or some, Watford forest or something. Or even on the property, there's a few forests right there in the property, or Chaitanya College. There were some Leelas over there. But this is... So Prabhupada, he checked this, he said, this is not right. So then he said that we worship Radha and Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. What does that mean? That means that we maintain kind of a mood of Aishwarya, on reverence, at least in the beginning, on reverence, respect, regularity, rules and regulations, formalities, conch shells, things like this. Because in the worship, and the worship in Dwarka Puja or Mathura Puja, these type of Aishwarya Pujas, there's all these kind of strict rules and regulations in the Archan Marg, which are left over from Treta Yuga, from Dwapara Yuga. Because Dwapara Yuga was the Archan Marg, was the Yuga Dharma, was Archan. Is that right? Deity worship. So, these things were going on for thousands and thousands of years. This puja, elaborate puja. But there's Archana Marg, which follows this Yama Niyama, which is given by in that Hari Bhakti Vilas. So Prabhupada, an established temple, he established that. But Vrindavan, the Goswami temples of Vrindavan, there's Archana Marg and there's Bhav Seva. So Bhav Seva means the bhava, the emotions, the feelings, the intimate exchanges between Thakurji and the Pujari. And generally that's more with one's personal deity. Like one may have a personal deity and he's saying, oh, I have my shalagrams, I'm going to the Yamuna. I don't know, I don't worship shalagrams, so I don't know what they do. But say he has a Giriraj, Govardhan Shila. He says, oh, I'm going to the Yamuna. I'll take Govardhan with me. So you put Govardhan in a bead bag or whatever. You'll see some devotees. There's different ways. There's an informal way of worshiping Govardhan and there's a formal way. So in Bhav Seva, Govardhan will be in the bead bag of some Baba or some sannyasi, whatever. And he'll go to the Yamuna, then he'll take Govardhan out and put him in the Yamuna. then hold him up on his hand like that and let him get a nice sun bath and dry in the sun on the palm of his hand. Then he's dried off, and then he'll find some piece of wood or something from the Yamuna and put the Govardhan there, and he brought some fruits and makes maybe offering to fruit, different ways to kind of bhav save, and then put him back in his bead bag and go around the Parikrama Marg. I've seen. So this is bhav seva. So the temples in Vrindavan, they're very much on the level of, they're mixing both bhav seva and archana marg. So they have regulated artiks and regulated offerings and very strict principles of cleanliness and bathing first and all kinds of mudras for all these things. So they kind of mix both. So on the platform of Raghunuga Bhakti, there's very much a spontaneous mood of service. So like we go to Radharaman, when we were first, in 1977, we first came to take darshan of Radharaman, we couldn't observe very clearly the situation, and we thought, oh, he doesn't even have a flute. Krishna has no flute. This temple, they don't even have a flute for Krishna. No conch shell, they don't even offer Krishna a flute. That's really spontaneous. So then I came to know that actually there is a flute, but it's in his elbow. If you ever see it, he has a flute, but it's sticking up like this. And then you ask the pujaris, why is that? And they say, oh, well, you know, Radharani's always stealing Krishna's flute. And so, you know, he's so overwhelmed with Radharani's emotions, and she's slipping the flute out of it. She's on her way to steal the flute, and he doesn't even know it. He's just smiling and standing there. And she has her arm around him like this, and she's going, whoop! You know, he's just there. You can imagine, he's there like with this, with Radharani embracing her on the left side. And he's all absorbed in looking at her and completely, you know, open, what do you call it? Self-forgetful. It's called Mugdata. Mugdata. He completely forgets himself in the presence of Radharani. And then, meanwhile, her arm is around Krishna's shoulder and doot, 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 doot. And she's slipping the flute out of his arm, out of his hand, and she's going to hide it and pass it over to Lita Sakhi, and then a big, you know, problem goes on. Bamsi Chori. Stealing a flute, and then there's a whole other leela. Hey, who took my flute? What's this going on? You know, that flute is chased, and you girls aren't chased, and there's so many dialogues and the whole big pastime. So that's a bhav, because Krishna is supposed to play his flute, except when he takes rest. He even takes rest with his flute, and then when he takes his boga, they take the flute out. But why? I mean, Krishna can eat with his eyes. He doesn't need it. Can just leave the flute in, he can look. Even taking the flute out is a type of bhav. If you're out, so you can see even in our ISKCON puja there's kind of a blend of Aishwarya, Archana Marg, which is basically Aishwarya on reverence, and this bhava seva, which is very intimate, sweet, loving mood. Because usually we take the flute out when Krishna eats. So that means you're thinking of him as a person. I mean, I eat with my mouth. If I'm playing my flute, I can't eat my lunch. Right, so I had to put my flute down and eat my prasadam. In the same way, when Krishna, we are thinking, oh yeah, Krishna, you have to take your flute out now so you can take your prasadam. But then we sing Angani Yasya Lakshakalendriya Vrittima. We sing that shloka that all the senses are interchangeable. You can eat with your eyes. You can eat with your mind. You can eat with your ears. Senses. The mind is also a sense. So when I'm offering manasi, I you better be able to eat with your mind, because part of my puja is manasi puja. In my manasi puja, I'm supposed to offer so many things more than what I offer externally. And if I don't do manasi puja, then my external puja is not acceptable, right? So in my manasi puja, in my mind, I'm offering so many things to you. Kachoris and rubbery and halava with blueberries and walnuts and all kinds of exotic things. And then, so I'm offering to you in my mind, so that means you better be eating in your mind, because they're not on the plate. So if you're only eating what's on the plate and you're only eating with your mouth, then I'm out of luck. My manasi puja doesn't get accepted. But my manasi puja does get accepted. Because when I was in South India and I was a Brahmin, and I had some sweet rice, I was offering it to you and it was very hot. And I was, in my mind, I was thinking, oh, this is really nice sweet rice. So I better make sure it's not too hot. So I went to see if it was too hot with my finger. And I touched my finger. Ow! It was so hot. I said, I better let it cool off. I took a banana leaf and I started fanning it to cool it off. So it would be appropriate temperature to offer to you. But when I woke up from my meditation, I saw my finger was, it was all burned. It was red. Now this story is told in Nectar Devotion. So this shows that Manasi Seva is indeed real Seva, real service, and it is indeed accepted by the Lord. So it is, this is why they don't blow the conch. I explain why they don't blow the conch shell, because they have this bhav that if they blow the conch shell, then, you know, the gopis, because the gopis are here in apricot, they're here in their unmanifested form. But if they hear the sound of the conch shell again, you know, coming from Radharaman's temple, or Radhashyama Sundara Govindaji's temple, then they may just leave altogether. And you won't even see them in Aprakrita Leela. So that is their bhav, because they're identifying with that mood of Vrindavan, and the mood of Vrindavan is Madhurya Dham. So in Madhurya Dham, everything is sweet. Krishna is sweet, the land is sweet, the cows are sweet, his smile is sweet, his flute is sweet, and the conch shell is not so sweet. So the conch shell is not offered in these Goswami temples. Gandharvika. Radhakunda Tata. Venu Shringa Pada Chinna Megamala. Vasantasha Shanka Shanka Karatala. Yugala Vilase Anukula Jani. Lila Vilase Udipakamani. So he says that all these things, Veno Shringa Bhara Chinna Mega Mala Vasanta Shashanka Shanka Karatala. So all these things, the buffalo horn, the bugle, well that's the bugle is the buffalo horn. The footprints of the cows in the dust, the banks of blackish cloud, these are all Udipana, these are all stimulants for the remembrance of the loving service of Radha and Krishna. They're called Udipana, right? So the conch shell is mentioned there. I know all these elements are very conducive for Sri Radha's and Krishna's loving yugal exchanges. And thus I consider them as actual udipika, stimuli for their enjoyment in their leelas. So I can't really comment so much, but we have to accept the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as because the conch shell, when I think of all different books that we study, I can't think so much in relationship with Nitya Leela of Radha and Krishna, where conch shell comes in, other than the in the most the sound of the conch shell. The conch shell itself is an object. I can't place it anywhere. I can't see it in Nitya Vrindavan and it Leela exchanges, so I can't really comment of the conch shell, but I can't see the object, because these udipika means either the sound or the object. Like he's saying, footprints. I see footprints in it. It's stimuli to remind me when I see cow's footprints. Reminds me of Krishna's Gocharan Leela, or when Radharani goes out after Krishna and his Gopastami. And the conch shell, in other words, udipana, the concept of udipana, which is mentioned in Nectar Devotion under alambana, the two the aspects of alambana that are on about the conch shell. You see different things, or you see a bank of blue clouds, and then someone might say, it's going to rain. So a materialistic person will say it's going to rain, those are rain clouds, but a devotee will see a bank of blue clouds and he may faint. If he's Mukunda Datta or Mukunda Das, he sees a peacock feather and he faints in ecstasy, so much flushed with the remembrance of his Lord is so much present in his heart, and he loves his Lord so much, and he's thinking so intensely of his Lord moment to moment. As soon as he sees something in his environment or hears something in his environment which is reminiscent of his Lord, then it overwhelms his consciousness to such an extent that he experiences the eighth level of sattvic bhavs known as pralaya. Pralaya means destruction, or in this case, fainting. He goes unconscious, so it's a destruction of your consciousness momentarily. So it's called pralaya. So that happens. There's many instances of that happening. So one thing is that someone can see a conch shell, and there's three lines in the conch shell, and Krishna's neck has three lines on it. Naturally, there's three like little lines on his neck from bending or whatever. Because he's always bending like that. So you get, you know, you get lines when you bend. When you bend, you have to have some lines, you know. You can't keep straight when you bend. So from bending his neck, those three lines are from bending his neck towards Radharani. And there's, and what there's there, whenever anything's done in three, it means affirmative. Which is like in Vedic conjunction, when something's repeated three times, it means that this is the absolute injunction, absolute fact. Like your mother says, don't do that, don't do it, don't do that. And you say, well, I better not do that. No. So when we say, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalona Stevanasiv Gati, so we say, there's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way but chanting Harinam to attain perfection or prema in the sage. So in the same way, Krishna is turning his neck like this towards Radharani, and it gets three lines in it. So those lines mean yes, yes, yes. Those three lines are saying yes, I'm for you. Yes, I'm with you. Yes, I'm of you. Because Krishna is made of Radharani, and he's for Radharani, and he's always with Radharani. Radharani Sangam, Radhamayi. Radharani is Krishnamayi, and Krishna is Radhamayi. So these three lines are there. So if you look at a conch shell, if you look where it goes inside, this is what it means generally, because I have one conch shell used for bathing. And where the hole is, where the conch shell turns inside, there's three ridges there. Three lines in the conch shell doesn't mean outside the conch shell. It means inside, because that's where it looks like a neck also. It's very smooth. You know where it curves in? You know, when you put your hand in to blow a conch shell, or you bathing, where the hole is, where it curves in, that's where you'll find three little ridges, what I call ridges. They're saying lines, but they're more like ridges. And that those, when someone sees that, they're reminded of Krishna's neck, because Krishna's neck tapers. It tapers like the conch shell, which it's taper means it's a little bit thick at the base, and you know, thick, wider here, and it goes narrower to the top. So it goes like that, and it's very smooth. And you see that's a very smooth and glossy part of the conch shell also. It's very smooth inside there. Outside it's a little, maybe rough. But inside there it's very smooth and glossy and has these three ridges. So that's one way of saving the day, so to speak. Because frankly, you know, other than that, if I think of all the different shastras that, you know, you're well aware of and myself, I never see a conch shell coming up, someone blowing conch shell or conch shell. I never see anywhere. Krishna Bhavanamrita, Govinda Lilamrita, Bhavana Sarasangraha, you know, Krishna Nika Kumudi. I never heard. The conch shell is kind of absent, isn't it? But sometimes we hear that Balaram wears a necklace of conch shells, right? He has small, little tiny conch shells and cowrie shells. So if you were to see, if you are, if Balaram was your Ishtadev, or you were in Sakyaras or something in Balaram's party, if you saw little conch shells or somewhere, you will think of Balaram, just like devotees when they go to Mayapur, they bathe in the Ganga. So there's so many freshwater conch shells that are there. They're little tiny ones. And then when you're bathing the Ganga, and if you find one in the sand, then you immediately think of Balaram. Because he wears the conch shell necklace, or you think of Nittai, right? Thank you very much.